From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. Maine's net total of COVID-19 cases has increased by 21 since yesterday. The death toll remained unchanged at 134. The Maine CDC says it is tracking 465 active cases, 28 fewer than yesterday. Also, the number of cases linked to an August 7th wedding in Millinocket has grown to 158. The federal government plans to purchase and distribute hundreds of millions of doses of COVID-19 vaccine, but faces challenges in storing those doses. Senator Susan Collins of Maine raised the issue at a hearing of the Senate Health Committee. Mal Leary has more.
Collins questioned National Institutes for Health Director Francis Collins about the storage capacity for one vaccine under development that requires refrigeration at temperatures below 0 Fahrenheit. She said it's doubtful that hospitals can afford those specialized units.
Unless we're helping with the purchase of those very expensive refrigeration units.
That's a great question, Senator. And I think there's an intense effort underway right now to figure out how best to address this. And
the committee is overseeing efforts to develop an effective vaccine and systems for making it available nationwide. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And after 5 years and several attempts, Saddleback Mountain in Rangeley is opening again for skiing on December 15th. General Manager and CEO Andy Shepard says Saddleback's old chairlift, which took 11 minutes to get people up the mountain, has been replaced with a new $7.2 million quad lift that has shortened the ride to just 4 minutes.
And it'll take 2,400 people an hour up the mountain. So we feel like we've taken one of the biggest negatives of the Saddleback experience, which was it took forever to get up the mountain. We've taken that off the table with this new high-speed detachable quad.
Shepard says renovations have also been made to the lodge, which will enhance views, greatly increase seating capacity, and snowmaking has also been expanded. Saddleback closed 5 years ago and under financial duress and was purchased last January by Arcturus Impact Fund of Boston, which Shepard says invests in economically distressed communities and in particular ones that have lost their primary employer. In weather tonight, clouds with fog in the south and light showers north, lows in the high 40s to the mid-60s. Tomorrow, overcast and humid with showers in the north and highs in the mid-50s to mid-70s. The Calvary Baptist Church in Sanford, which has had a COVID-19 outbreak infecting 10 people, is not requiring its congregation or school students to wear masks. But according to its attorney, the church is taking other precautions. Calvary Baptist made headlines after its pastor railed against state safety guidelines and is now claiming that he and his family have become the target of death threats. Sanford police, however, say they have not received reports of threats. Patty White has more.
David Gibbs III is the president and general counsel for the Florida-based National Center for Life and Liberty. It's a nonprofit dedicated to protecting the rights of churches, including the Calvary Baptist Church in Sanford. Gibbs says that his organization is prepared to defend the church should it face or pursue legal action, though nothing is pending.
Calvary Baptist Church has no desire to go to court. That's not their goal. They just want to be given the freedom to do what they've always done in their community, but to do that in a way that is, fair and right.
The church has drawn public attention because its pastor, Todd Bell, officiated a wedding in Millinocket that's the source of the state's largest outbreak of COVID-19, now linked to more than 150 cases. After an outbreak erupted at his church, Bell criticized state safety guidelines in his sermons. But Gibbs says Calvary Baptist Church is encouraging physical distancing at services, is keeping indoor crowd size close to the 50-person limit, and has enhanced cleaning. Masks, however, are optional.
There are folks that wear masks, but I would say it would be a minority that is wearing the mask. Certainly when they get inside and are socially distanced with their families, most would not be wearing the mask.
Gibbs says masks are also not required for students or staff at the church's school, Sanford Christian Academy. The National Center for Life and Liberty website recommends that churches comply with mask mandates. And Gibbs says he's advised Bell that masks are an encouraged practice. Even so, he says there's a public misconception that Bell is making dangerous decisions. And as a result, the pastor, his family, and the church have received numerous threats.
The ones that have been probably deemed most credible would be a half dozen.
Gibbs says one threat was sent directly to the Sanford Police Department, but Chief Thomas Connolly characterizes it differently.
I guess you could say it, you could construe it to be a threat, but it really was not, by definition, threatening.
Connolly says there was no mention of violence.
It just was a rather unusual phone call from an individual who doesn't even live in Maine, who just made a statement on the idea of let's be safe and let's make sure everything was done correctly that we looked into, and we determined that it probably was not a valid threat.
Connolly says the Calvary Baptist Church hasn't reported any other threats to the Sanford police. He says he has a cordial relationship with Pastor Bell that he wants to preserve. But when it comes to masks, he wishes everybody would just wear them. It's really not intrusive, he says, especially considering it could prevent the spread of COVID-19 and save someone's life. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
One of the biggest challenges that students are facing as schools reopen this fall are new hybrid schedules, in which they may go to class just 2 or 3 days a week. That's also challenging for many parents who are now scrambling to find childcare in a state where access and cost have already been major barriers even before the pandemic. As part of our Deep Dive Coronavirus series, Robbie Feinberg has this story.
Come right over here.
On a recent weekday morning, a few dozen students trudged through the weeds outside of the Lewiston campus of the Margaret Murphy Centers for Children and descend into a nearby forest.
This is a big step.
The center is a special purpose private school that serves students with disabilities. But this fall, it also had to solve a staffing problem, as some of the teachers wrestled with a range of reopening scenarios at their own children's schools.
I definitely started panicking when there was talk about schools doing the hybrid model. 2 days, 3 days in person, and 3 days off.
Jane Averill is a special education teacher at the center who has two kids in second and fifth grade.
I really didn't have much of a backup option. Looking into family potentially, or friends, reaching out to other people that are within our community. It is, with COVID, it is scary. Do I want the kids all over the place and going here and there and everywhere?
Executive Director Michelle Hathaway says after hearing these same concerns from many teachers, the school decided to take a big step. It transformed conference rooms and other spaces into a child care center for about 40 children of its employees.
And so, I think that one of the huge challenges for working families has been the unknown with COVID. Even today, we have students that are expected to start public school in a week who still don't know what days they're scheduled to go to. And so we've said to our families, we'll make it work.
The program is just one of many ways that schools, providers, and other organizations are scrambling to meet the demand for childcare fueled by school reopening.
It's a huge puzzle. And so if no one's sitting at a table looking at how all the puzzle pieces fit together, then it's not going to make sense and it's not going to click and work.
Tara Williams is the executive director of the Maine Association for the Education of Young Children. She says reopening has led to a tangled web of new challenges. Parents now looking for care on select days per week, and teachers themselves searching for childcare.
I mean, I think about in the area of the state where I live in, and there's hybrid plans that are kids in school Thursday, Fridays, other ones Tuesday, Fridays. There's just every morning, 5 days a week. And I think, it's really difficult to try to plan for things that you haven't planned for in the past. And I'm thinking about all the work that school district leaders are doing right now. But if we don't find a way to plan together, then our schools are not going to be able to open and run well.
The challenges also come at a time when Maine's already strapped child care system has been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. The State Department of Health and Human Services says that about 86% of licensed providers are currently operating. But despite millions of dollars in grants aimed at bolstering the system, 63 licensed providers have closed permanently since the spring, with more than half saying their decision was at least in part caused by the pandemic. The Mills administration has also allocated $25 million for schools to spend on developing day programming to supplement in-person learning. Many are partnering with groups such as YMCAs. Bangor Region YMCA CEO Diane Dickerson says her organization is working with 10 school districts to provide care for at least 200 students this fall. It has already had to double its staff and open up new programs in churches and other spaces in order to meet the need.
So we have got to be that source to provide a sense of normalcy, comfort, safety, nurturing, and as much support as we can possibly give, both to the parents and to the child.
Other districts, including the Westbrook School Department, are opening their own child care programs, too. But Chrissy Davis, a Skowhegan child care provider and chair of the Family Child Care Association of Maine, says she's been frustrated that she hasn't seen many schools working with smaller family providers, which often play a larger child care role in rural communities. Davis says she's already received a lot of demand from parents in search of care.
I've got a waiting list of 30 people that want those slots. So I'm just trying to fit in the best fits for those slots. Yeah, it's insane the number of people looking for care. And I flat out am turning down, not even considering any more school age, because I can't.
Other options have begun popping up to meet the needs created by school reopening, like a karate dojo being transformed into a remote learning center this fall. But with few options, many parents will likely look to family or friends to help fill in the gaps in Maine's child care network. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
Throughout the summer, Mainers have been struggling over the decision of whether or not to send kids back to school. As part of our deep dive project, we spoke with a number of teachers, including English and Design Thinking teacher Kate Meyer. She works at Mount Desert High School, which will start the year remotely, as it tries to assess the potential fallout from tourist season before transitioning to a hybrid model in late September. But Meyer says even that approach leaves her feeling wary.
The spring was crisis teaching. We all have our own families and we all had our own issues with the pandemic, especially at the beginning, as did our students and as did their families. My whole style of teaching and everything that I know from my 20 years in this career to be good education is not what is going to be happening in the classroom. And I have a big concern that parents don't understand that and that students don't understand that they want to come back to school and they want everything to be normal and they want to hang out with their friends. And that is not what it is going to be at all. We'll be trying to get kids in and out of that building as quickly as possible. They will be stuck at their desks. They're going to be doing their learning on a laptop, even if they're right in front of me in the classroom. The only thing is that they'll then have the added risk of sitting in my classroom in a group doing the same work that their peers can do remotely. When I teach argumentative writing, I spend a day with all these great argumentative topics. You know, I'll give my students a topic that they will feel strongly about, right? And they'll move to one of the corners in the room. Do they agree, partially disagree? And we'll stand together in groups and in different corners of the room, and they'll share their arguments with each other, and it turns into these kind of lively mini debates as a way to prepare for writing our argumentative essays. And there's a ton of movement and a ton of laughter and a ton of, you know, students talking to each other. That's an activity I will not be doing this year. Teachers do a lot more than plan and teach classes. And so how do we fit everything that we do? You know, how do I plan every single class three different ways and still have the time to give my students all of the feedback on their work that they deserve? You know, my husband and I have really lived very healthy lifestyles, and so we've been very lucky in that sense. And we are not in high-risk categories, but my mother-in-law is. And so what does that mean, you know, in terms of how often we get to see her, we're basically the only people that she has. And so if we have to remove ourselves from her life, you know, who takes care of her? Do I need to come home and try to quarantine myself from my husband so that he can still go care for his mother? Or, you know, do I risk getting him sick and then maybe neither of us can go care for her? So that is really stressful. And it's also stressful because I have colleagues who are in high risk categories. And it's really concerning that they are going to basically be forced to put their health and safety at risk and come into the building. There are not a lot of options. The people who have the means to take a leave of absence for a year that's unpaid, I think we will see almost a mass exodus from the field of education, from people who can do that. So that's one of the things that was offered to us. If you would like to take a leave of absence unpaid for a year, then that's your option. Or retire, or, you know, some people will be protected under the ADA and will be able to have accommodations. But I think we are going to see people who have the means and the ability, we're going to see them leave if we go to face-to-face education.
That piece was produced by Willis Ryder Arnold with reporting from Robbie Feinberg. You can find it in all of our deep dive coronavirus coverage of school reopening at mainepublic.org/coronavirus. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about conscious capitalism. I'm Nora Flaherty.